our time with how to be an anti-racist. Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you for being here, for joining the book club, for committing to a deep dive exploration of this book. Let's start by taking a deep breath, just a moment for mindfulness, getting grounded and centered. Maybe close your eyes if you're in a space where it's safe to do so. Take any little movements your body might be calling for. And then take a nice deep inhale all the way into your belly. And a slow exhale. Good work. Yummy, right? Mindful pauses at the key of so much when we're doing self-exploration, personal growth, self-discovery, anti-racist work. We must know how to pause and check in with ourselves, calm our nervous systems, calm our minds. And so I appreciate you taking that pause with me. So most of you have read books with me in the past in the style that we do, and you are the one you've been waiting for, this virtual book club. But there's also a few folks who are new. So if this is your very first time that you've listened to one of my audios, that you've read a book with me, I'd like to extend a special welcome your way. However the universe brought us together, I'm grateful. And I'm looking forward to walking this journey of learning about anti-racism with you. So let's dive right in. Let's talk about this week's reading, which is the introduction and chapter one. So in the introduction, Ibram starts out the book by telling us a story of a time in high school when he participated in an oratory contest and he gave a fiery, passionate, racist speech in front of a mostly black crowd, and the audience and the judges ate it up. So this brings forth some questions, right? Like, how was his speech racist and why was the crowd eating it up? It seems like there's some cognitive dissonance happening there. And there was, because of this thing called internalized racism, which Ibram didn't realize that he was affected by and the crowd was affected by at that time. So he explains he and the crowd had spent their lives absorbing all kinds of racist ideas that were rooted in the idea that people, not policies, are the problem. And this manifested in beliefs like, the problem is that black youth don't value education as much as their non-black counterparts. Or the problem is that they think it's okay to climb the high tree of pregnancy, and they think it's okay to confine their dreams to sports and music, and so on. And so Ibram writes that, quote, in my applause-stoked flights of oratory, I didn't realize that to say something is wrong about a racial group is to say something is inferior about that racial group. I did not realize that to say something is inferior about a racial group is to say a racist idea. I thought I was serving my people when in fact I was serving up racist ideas about my people to my people. So what was happening, as Ibram says, is that a racist culture had handed me the ammunition to shoot black people, to shoot myself, and I took and used it. Internalized racism is the real black on black crime. He continues, quote, I was a dupe, a chump who saw the ongoing struggles of black people on MLK Day 2000 and decided that black people themselves were the problem. This is the consistent function of racist ideas and of any kind of bigotry more broadly, to manipulate us into seeing people as the problem instead of the policies that ensnare them. So with this, Ibram introduces us to the central idea of the book, which is that if we want to dismantle racism, we must turn our attention away from people and towards policies. We must identify racist policies and then trade them out for anti-racist policies. So I don't know, for me, I don't know if anybody else like feels stirred and excited by this idea. I like it because it gives us a path forward that's more clear than spend the rest of your life unpacking your own internalized racism, which is something important, right? We need to do that as well. But after a while, it can feel a little directionless, especially if you're not brand new to this. So for me, I've spent the past few years learning about racism and how it manifests within me. And I'm now at a point where I feel like I'm ready to look at, okay, so now like I have a good foundational understanding. Not that there's not so many more blind spots to uncover, but there's enough there that I'm ready for the next step. And to be clear, this isn't me skipping past the uncomfortable part of careful examination of the racist ideas that exist in my own psyche. I've done that. I'm continuing to do that. This is not me getting right to the doing part in order to bypass the deeply uncomfortable stage of feeling and integrating that must come first when we're learning about how we've been complicit in oppressive systems. So if you're new to this work, just know that what I'm describing is a common and documented response by oppressors beginning to learn about how they've been complicit in an oppressive system. So it's very common to be like, okay, I'm immediately going to start doing, or I'm immediately going to start telling other people why they're racist. And, you know, it's like turn the attention away from the discomfort I feel at realizing these things exist in me, distract myself with something else. And that is harmful. It's kind of like, you know, we have to allow ourselves time to mature before we go all gung-ho. And an analogy that I thought of is like, it's kind of like a teenager who's newly in love, right? Like in the falling hard stage. And they're trying to give relationship advice to couples who've been together for years. And you may remember, you know, the first time you fell in love, like you might like, oh, in that stage, like everything's so high and happy and exciting. Like you might think, ah, I just like, this feels so good. Like I am doing something right. I know all about love and relationships. But then anybody who's been in a long-term relationship would be like, sweetie, it's been like 3 months, you know, like enjoy this time. There's nothing like it, but maybe wait a hot minute before you start giving people relationship advice. And even though learning about how we have been oppressors in white supremacy is not as much fun as falling in love, there's similar qualities in like sort of the passion and the interest and the hunger that can come out in that initial stage. So just remember that you need time to mature before you can be of much use to others. I gave this warning so many times as we read our previous book, White Fragility, and here I am giving it again. And I'm sure you're tired of hearing me say it by now if you read White Fragility with us. And yet I just feel like I need to keep saying it. At least for now. Maybe I'll stop. Maybe this is the last time. But let me just reiterate, if you're in a place where you've been consistently doing this work for a while now, then maybe you, like me, might be embarking on how to be an anti-racist with the hope that it will provide direction on actionable next steps that go beyond continue unpacking your own racism. But if this is your first deep dive into learning about racism, then I'd encourage you to set the intention of simply learning and integrating as we read this book and leaving it at that for now. Okay, I'm going to get off my, what do you call it? The thing that you stand on, pulpit. There's another phrase that's not coming to me. Anyway, let's get back to the introduction. Ibram explains why it's problematic to be not racist, because neutrality perpetuates the status quo of racism and white supremacy. And he explains that the only way to undo racism is to consistently identify and describe it and then dismantle it. So in other words, we must practice anti-racism. And to be clear, this doesn't mean we must become anti-racist because it's not a fixed identity. Ibram says, quote, "We can be racist 1 minute and an anti-racist the next. What we say about race, what we do about race in each moment determines what, not who, we are." So I love how Ibram continues this, and he drives the point home by saying, I used to be racist most of the time. I am changing. I am no longer identifying with racist by claiming to be not racist. I am no longer speaking through the mask of racial neutrality. I am no longer manipulated by racist ideas to see racial groups as problems. I no longer believe a Black person cannot be racist. And then skipping further along, he says, I've come to see that the movement from racist to anti-racist is always ongoing. It requires understanding and snubbing racism based on biology, ethnicity, body, culture, behavior, color, space, and class. And beyond that, it means standing ready to fight at racism's intersections with other bigotries. Okay, so here we are. Are you ready to learn how to stand ready to fight at racism's intersections with other bigotries? Let's take a deep breath before we dive into chapter one, because there's a lot to process in chapter one. So let's just start with a moment, another moment of mindfulness, inhaling slowly and exhaling. Okay, chapter one, definitions. So at the beginning of every chapter in this book, Ibram gives us the essential definitions for the chapter. And so here in chapter one, his definitions are of racist and anti-racist. He defines racist as one who is supporting a racist policy through their actions or inaction or expressing a racist idea. And he defines anti-racist as one who is supporting an anti-racist policy through their actions or expressing an anti-racist idea. So later on, he'll give us sort of more to dig into with those definitions. The definitions at the beginning of the chapter, you know, I've read this partially before and I found it pretty overwhelming the first time. I don't think I absorbed that much. So I would just remember that he puts those definitions at the beginning, not necessarily because we're meant to like understand them right away, right? He's going to spend the chapter digging into them. So we could remember that if we first read it and we're like, what is he talking about? Okay. So as the chapter begins, Ibram shares the story of his parents, how his mom and dad met as college students when they both became enraptured with the idea of Black power. They were at the same powerful week-long conference in 1970, which inspired both of them to, quote, leave the civilizing and conserving and racist church they realized they'd been part of. They were saved into Black liberation theology and joined the churchless church of the Black Power movement. So after that conference, they went back to their separate universities and separately arrived at, quote, a creed with which to shape their lives, to be the type of Christians that Jesus the Revolutionary inspired them to be. So this is quite the How We Met story, isn't it? It's much more interesting than How I Met My Husband. And Ibram includes it because it's, you know, he's like, well, this, you know, his parents individually arrived at this conference and arrived at these ideas at the same time, became enraptured with the same thing, decided they wanted to live their life by the same core creed. And in that, somehow, you know, they spent time together, they fell in love, they got married, they started a family. So that backstory is really essential to the ideas that Ibram received from his parents while he was growing up. So then he brings us to these words, which are underlined in my book. I mean, that's not saying much because a lot of words are underlined in my book, but these are also underlined because I think they're really important. I see it as crucial. He says, Ibram writes, that sounded confusing. Let me start over. Ibram writes, quote, the key act for both of us, which means him and his parents, was defining our terms so that we could begin to describe the world and our place in it. Definitions anchor us in principles. This is not a light point. If we don't do the basic work of defining the kind of people we want to be in language that is stable and consistent, we can't work towards stable, consistent goals. Some of my most consequential steps towards being an anti-racist have been the moment when I arrived at basic definitions. Ooh, so I like that. We're going to have a call to action around that idea later. It's not a light point. We need definitions to define who we are and who we want to be. So next, Ibram takes us through a series of definitions that I experience like climbing up a ladder, with each step leading to the next step. So he starts with racism, which is a marriage of racist policies and racist ideas that produces and normalizes racial inequities. Then we get to racial inequity, when two or more racial groups are not standing on approximately equal footing, which brings us to racial equity, when two or more racial groups are standing on relatively equal footing. So for example, if there were relatively equal percentages of different racial groups who lived in owner-occupied homes, or relatively equal percentages of different racial groups who had a college degree or a high school degree or whatever it may be. Okay, then we go on to racist policy. Any measure that produces or sustains racial inequity. And then an anti-racist policy is the opposite, any measure that produces or sustains racial equity between racial groups. So, as we're learning, policy change is the core message of this book. And this is a point that Ibram makes abundantly clear when he writes, "Every policy in every institution, in every community, in every nation is producing or sustaining either racial inequity or equity between racial groups." So Ibram then goes on to explain why he believes that our focus should be on racist policy instead of racist discrimination. Because we all have the power to discriminate, but only an exclusive few have the power to make policy. So focusing on racial discrimination takes our eyes off the central agents of racism, which is racist policy and racist policymakers, or what Ibram calls racist power. Okay, that's a lot. Still with me? That's a lot of words that are pretty complex. Basically, got to focus on policy, not people. And discrimination is not necessarily the bad thing that we have maybe been led to believe it is. Ibram says that if racial discrimination is defined as treating, considering, or making a distinction in favor or against an individual based on that person's race, then racial discrimination is not inherently racist. The defining question is whether the discrimination is creating equity or inequity. If discrimination is creating equity, then it is anti-racist. If discrimination is creating inequity, then it is racist. So I like how he just lays this out very clearly for us. In short, we need to practice racial discrimination until we're able to reach and sustain racial equity. So, used to this end, racial discrimination is an anti-racist practice. Are you still with me? Again, that's a lot. Don't feel like, if you feel overwhelmed by all of the stuff that Ibram's throwing at us, you are not alone. It is okay. Remember that you can revisit the chapter. You can revisit this audio. The ideas will continue to be developed as you go throughout the book. Don't feel like you have to understand it all right away, right? We'll take in little bits and pieces as best we can, and we'll trust the process. That's really important. Okay, so let's move back to a couple more definitions. There's the definition of a racist idea, which is any idea that suggests one racial group is inferior or superior to another racial group in any way. And then there's an anti-racist idea, any idea that suggests the racial groups are equals in all their apparent differences, that there is nothing right or wrong with any racial group. Anti-racist ideas argue that racist policies are the cause of racial inequities. So not racist people, but racist policies. Do people create policies? Yes. But policies, there's more like the policies of some of an institution, whether it's a business or government or school or whatever, have much more impact than the policies of one person and how they go about their lives. So anti-racist ideas argue that racist policies are the cause of racial inequities. Okay, and then to finish off the chapter, Ibram reminds us again that no one can become a racist or anti-racist. We only strive to be one or the other. And he describes these roles like peelable name tags that are placed and replaced based on what someone is doing or not doing, supporting or expressing in each moment. So I could quickly pivot in one moment to the next from racist to anti-racist, back to racist, back to anti-racist. And so can you, and so can all of us. And so the goal is not to become anti-racist. The goal is to practice anti-racism more and more often. And then finally, we end with this line. To be an anti-racist is a radical choice in the face of this history, requiring a radical reorientation of our consciousness. Whew. So are you ready for a radical reorientation of your consciousness? Those words remind me, it's like embarking on a spiritual journey. Like you can expect that your core beliefs will be uprooted, brought into the light, and closely examined. And after that close examination, some beliefs you might decide to keep, some beliefs you might decide to throw out to be replaced with new ones. And it's all in the service of our evolution towards our highest good and the highest good of everyone. So at least that's the way I see it. Feel free to throw that out if it sounds all like mumbo jumbo to you. But if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that I think spirituality is infused in everything we do. And that's how I tend to see the world. And so you'll hear me talk about it. And if it doesn't make any sense to you, feel free to ignore me. Okay, let's talk about calls to action. I have two suggestions for you this week. Reminder for those of you who are new, not a reminder because you're new, so you haven't heard this before. The calls to action are suggestions, not requirements, and you are welcome to take them or leave them as you see fit. But the intention behind them is that it gives you an opportunity to engage on a deeper level with what we're learning so that you can actually integrate the book instead of just read it, think that was interesting, and move on with your life. If you have other calls to action that you feel like taking after you read a chapter or a couple chapters, feel free, do your own thing. But the core purpose of this book club is that we're here to read and integrate so that we can start to change the way that we show up. Both in all the books we read before now, and then these last two books where we're focused on racism. So all that being said, here are my two suggested calls to action. Feel free to do one, feel free to do both, feel free to do neither, whatever works for you, not from a place of like numbness and resistance and like I'm too busy, but from a place of like, I took a moment to get mindful, listen to my own mind and heart, and this feels like something to do that would help to advance my understanding of these concepts. Okay, suggestion one is begin to develop a definition of the kind of person you want to be. So for now, just write down some initial thoughts, your core values, whatever else comes to mind. You'll continue to work on this throughout our time with this book. And this is not just related to anti-racism. It's related to life in general, right? And then, but they're going to inform each other. Like for me, it's becoming more and more clear that equity, that a world that works for everyone is one of my core values, my core visions, my core driving forces. So that's part of this definition. I'm going to do this too. I haven't really, like I've done lots of self-awareness work, but the way that Ibram put it in the introduction, I just loved. So I want to spend some time with it as well. Okay, my second suggestion for a call to action is to write or type up a cheat sheet of the definitions Ibram gives us in this chapter. So pretend that you're a student in high school or college and you're going to be assessed on this. Do you know it? Do you not? And revisit the definitions every few days in order to help you commit them to memory. Not in a I can repeat them verbatim kind of way, like I know the right words to say and I can regurgitate them, but in a like I get what this means kind of way. Because Ibram threw a lot at us in this chapter and we're just getting started. So I think it would be really beneficial if it feels like a lot to take some time to write out the definitions and just look at them for a few minutes a day or a few minutes every couple days. And that'll help it to integrate. Maybe teach them to someone else, you know, tell your spouse or tell a friend or a parent or a sibling, I'm learning about this book and here's some of the definitions I'm learning. We learn things much deeper when we teach them. So there is that. Yay! I am so glad that you're here. That's all I have for now. I will talk to you again in the week 2 audio next week. In the meantime, mwah, I love you all. Talk to you later.